Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian. I'm Daniel Messer.
Come and get 'em! Fruit Pie the Magician here at the Franklin School. What do kids like best about Hostess Fruit Pies?
I like the crust best. It holds good.
There's something missing in the world of libraries that I think really hurts us at times. One of the reasons we rely so much on vendors and third-party products is because we don't often take the time to just try and build a solution ourselves. Every successful company has a research and development division of some sort, even if it's just giving the employees a few hours every week to work on something different. Google famously allows its employees something called 20% time, where they encourage staff to spend 20% of their time working on ideas and side projects. Sometimes these side projects are just little ideas that don't go much of anywhere. Sometimes a 20% project can become Gmail, which is actually the case because Gmail was a project worked on during that 20% time. Sometimes I get to work on nifty projects because my job requires a unique solution to a given problem, and as things go, I've got a skill set that sometimes lends itself to creating solutions. Sometimes these projects intersect and converge in surprising ways, and I'll wind up using similar code or hardware or software or a combination of solutions where one project suddenly pertains to another. In this case, I've got a couple of projects that need a workable, preferably simple, and hopefully inexpensive way to do completely separate things. Luckily, I happen to have a few Raspberry Pis laying around. This is Cyberpunk Librarian, episode 24, Delicious 3.14159. My name is Daniel Messer, your friendly neighborhood cyberpunk librarian, and hey, welcome back to another episode of the show that explores the intersection of libraries and technology, and is all about living that high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. Hey, thanks for tuning in and allowing your podcatcher of choice to roll to and land on this episode. I tell you, it's good to be back in front of the microphone, and I think we've got ourselves an interesting, more technically oriented show lined up today, because we're going to talk about pie at the library. No, I don't mean the delicious sort of pie that your mom bakes, and despite the title of the show, I don't mean the irrational number that you get when you take the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. No, we are talking about Raspberry Pis, which may be something that still doesn't clear the air for some of the listeners out there, so if you happen to know what a Raspberry Pi is, great, sit tight for a second while I explain it to those who don't. So, a Raspberry Pi is an inexpensive computer you can pick up for around $40 or so. Now, I grant you, that $40 won't come with much except the computer itself. You'll need a keyboard and a mouse, an SD card or a micro SD card depending on the model. You're going to need a power cable, a plug, an HDMI cable, and some kind of monitor to hook it to. For around $40, you don't even get a case, man. You get a bare circuit board with an ARM chip and some RAM. Now then, for about $80, you can get a kit that comes with a case, a plug, a power cable, HDMI cable, and hey, a wireless dongle. Not bad, really. So, a Raspberry Pi may be inexpensive, but it's incredibly useful, especially if you only need it to do one thing. The Pi works off of the SD card or the micro SD card if you happen to get a Model B series Pi. There's a Model A, there's a Model B, I'm sure a Model C is in the works if it's not already out by the time you listen to this. The operating system is on the card, and it's also the storage for the device, so if you want 16 gigs of storage in your Pi, you can have that. Just get yourself a 16 gigabyte SD or micro SD card and slot it. The operating system of choice for the Pi is Linux, and there are custom spins of Linux available for the Raspberry Pi based off of well-known distros. Raspbian is common, and it's based off of Debian Linux. So you see Raspberry Pi, Debian, Raspberry, Debian, Raspbian. Yes. Geeks and their humor. There is also an arch derivative. There's others, but Raspbian seems to be sort of the flavor of choice for a lot of people, especially when they first start playing with a Raspberry Pi. The Pi may be small, but it has the ability to render and display HD video in Blu-ray quality. The parts needed to run it? Well, if you don't buy the whole kit, if you just get that $40 thing that I told you about where it's just the board itself, the computer, well, there's still a good chance you have everything you need lying around your house. Does your phone charge off of a micro USB plug, or do you have something that does charge off of a micro USB plug? That works to power the Pi. Got a keyboard and mouse? Great, the Pi has USB 2.0 ports for that. And if you have cables and card, then all you really lack is a case. Now, you can buy cases for Pis, you can 3D print cases for Pis, you can make cases out of Legos. Go nuts! So, the Pi won't win any awards for power and speed, but it's good enough to play back HD video. There are even a couple of XBMC derivatives available for the Pi, and they're pretty cool. So, you can use one as a little set-top box and take it to a friend's house. Run the OS on the SD card and, say, plug in an external hard drive with movies and music and so on. It works great. The downfall is multitasking. There's a great cartoon series called Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. I urge you to look it up. Check it out. It was on Netflix. I think it still might be. It's from the Cartoon Network. Anyway, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends is kind of just about that. There's this lady named Madame Foster who runs a sort of halfway house for imaginary friends. It's the place where imaginary friends go when their owners, sort of speak, stop believing in them. So it's funny, it's sometimes enchanting and heartwarming, but they had an episode that focuses on what they called scribbles. Now, scribbles are the half-formed imaginary friends of very young children. We're talking infants. Scribbles are at first thought to be useless, and they're just locked in a closet, so they don't cause trouble. But it turns out that they're incredibly useful as long as they're only doing a single thing at a time. So, if you want to have some scribbles do the dishes, you need one to wash, one to rinse, and one to dry. Raspberry Pis are kind of like that. Do you want one to be a web server? You can totally do that. Do you want one to be a file server? You can do that too. Do you want one that's a web server and a file server? And that one's not going to work so well. It'll do it, but it sure as heck isn't going to win any speed records or anything like that. But they're inexpensive. And you can network them because they come with Ethernet hookups, and there are kits that come with USB Wi-Fi plugs. It's because of their inexpensiveness and that single-purpose focus that these things have become well-loved by the open-source and maker community. You'll find Pis in robots, in server rooms, in kiosks, weather stations, all kinds of places. With some Linux know-how and multiple cards, that Pi that's currently acting as a tiny web server can be shut down and brought back up as a car audio device with just a swap of the SD cards. Cool, huh? So, I started fiddling with these little devices a while back, seeing what I could do with them, and, as always, trying to figure out if these things had any use for libraries. As it turns out, I think they do. I actually think they have a lot of uses, but in the interest of time, I'm just going to share one for now, and it's something that I'm working on right now. Well, not right now. I mean, right now I'm recording the show, and I'm not using a Pi. I'm using a MacBook Air. I mean, I'm doing this at work, and I'm not working right now, but it...
Shall we begin? Let's begin.
So let me tell you about this thing that I'm working on at my job. We came to realize that something we could probably use, at least in a sort of trial sense of the word, is a digital shelf talker. Now, if you don't know what a shelf talker is, it's basically a little card that sticks out from a shelf or something like that, And it not only calls attention to the collection that the card is sitting in, but it can also point the way to other resources. So, just as an example, you could have a shelf talker in the art section that's all about drawing comics and stuff, and that shelf talker actually points to another section of the collection that's about comics. So not only are you calling attention to the drawing section, you know, as to how to draw comics, but you can use it to point patrons and the customers to other parts of the collection, like the comic book section itself. So we thought we might try building a digital one, something that's powered by a Raspberry Pi, for instance, and is hooked to a monitor. Now, we have quite a few monitors that are just sort of sitting around not doing anything. They're just spares, and it seems a shame to get rid of them, but it also seems a shame that they're not doing much of anything except sitting on a shelf waiting to be phased in someplace where another monitor has died. So we decided to see if there was a way to maybe make a digital shelf talker out of a Raspberry Pi and existing tech. That way, we only really have to buy the Pi. We've got the monitors and we've got places to put them. So I looked into it, and sure enough, yes, there is a way to do this, and I'm going to tell you about the prototype that I'm working on now. It's pretty easy to set up. It takes a little Linux know-how, which is why I said this show will be a little tech-centric, but I think you'll be able to figure it out. And hey, I have lots of links in the show notes, which you can pick up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Check that out. I'll have links to all the stuff that I'm talking about, and I'll even include the outline that I'm using for this part of the podcast. That way you kind of can follow along on your own. So if you're listening to this in the car, on the train, or on the bus and feel like you maybe should start taking notes, for goodness sake, don't take notes. That's what the internet is for, and I will share my notes with you. So, the digital shelf talker needs to be something that we can stick out at a library, either on a shelf or on an end cap or just somewhere that we can use to promote different sections of the collection, right? So, for instance, we could put a digital shelf talker in with the Chilton's books and use it to call attention to the fact that we have the Chilton's database available through our library system and that customers can access that online. So, you know, things like that. And it can be moved around and easily relocated because what we want to do is use a Wi-Fi connection to the internet. That way you can move it around. You don't have to worry about, you know, data cables and everything else. You just have to have power. That's another thing about the Raspberry Pi I should point out. It's a fairly green solution to computing because it does not take very much power at all. Like I said, it's powered by a micro USB cable, and I swear to goodness, I've plugged in the cable that I've used to charge my cell phone before, not my current one because the Note 3 charges off of a USB 3.0 plug. Wow. But anyway, I've plugged in an older micro USB cell phone charger, and the Pi comes right up. So very green, very low energy. And with this digital shelf talker thing, we really just need a place to plug in. As long as we have power, we should theoretically be in business. So great. So here's what I've done. I've taken a Model B Raspberry Pi. Now, the difference between the Model B and the Model A, other than a few bells and whistles, is the micro SD card. The Model A takes a regular SD card, and the Model B uses a micro SD model, which is kind of nice, you know, smaller, a little bit more compact. It also has four USB 2.0 ports, which is kind of nice. So you're not at a loss for any ports, and yes, you can plug in all kinds of stuff. If you're going to plug in, say, an external hard drive, it would be good to plug that into a powered USB hub and then plug that into the Raspberry Pi. Like I said, it's a very low-power solution, so it might not have the oomph to power in an external hard drive. But if you happen to have a powered USB hub, you're probably going to be in business real quickly. So we're using a Model B Raspberry Pi, and this is a kit that I found on Amazon. Once again, links in the show notes to the kit that I'm using, the very exact kit. I believe it's like, I want to say it's $60 or something like that. Last I checked, the price has gone kind of up and down. I think when I originally bought it, it was around $70, but last I checked, it was closer to $60. So check the show notes. You'll get the latest price on it that way. But the great thing about this kit isn't just the fact that it comes with everything you would need. It comes with a case for the Pi, a really nice case, actually. It comes with a power cable, a plug, an HDMI cable. It even comes with little heat sinks that you can put on the chips and make it even cooler. That's nice, and those are great things. But the real value for this kit, for me, is it comes with a little micro sort of USB Wi-Fi plug. Now, I misspoke there. It's not actually a micro USB plug, but it's a very small plug that just goes in one of the USB ports, and it's a Wi-Fi adapter. It's great, and it's what you really need for a project like this. The funny thing is it comes with a little mini CD that has the drivers for that Wi-Fi plug on it, and seeing as how the Raspberry Pi does not have an optical drive, it's kind of useless. But that's okay, because you don't even need any drivers. If you plug in the little Wi-Fi USB plug, it works. I've never had a problem. So, that's sort of the hardware, the Model B Raspberry Pi. Pretty simple. Just hook everything up and plug it in. Now then, the software. This comes down to something that I kind of hinted at in an previous episode when I talked about doing digital signage with Zybo, which is an open source digital signage solution. Well, there's one for Raspberry Pi called Screenly, and the system that I'm using is called Screenly OSE, and the OSE stands for Open Source Edition. Screenly is pretty much the same thing as Zybo. It's a digital signage solution that you basically manage and operate through a web browser. So it's very easy to use once you have it set up. You just go to the IP of that Raspberry Pi through a web browser, usually on port 8080. So it'll be the IP colon port, you know, colon 8080. And you're in. It's that simple. You can use it to display slides, just image slides, PNGs, JPEGs, things like that. It'll also display MP4 movies, and it does it very well. Like I said, the Raspberry Pi can render HD video really easily. So if you make yourself a little movie that you want to put on your digital signage solution, it'll handle it. No problem at all. It'll also handle websites. It'll show, you know, a given website, which at first sounds kind of odd. Well, why would I want to show a website on a digital sign? Well, if that website happens to be, say, the current status of all of the study rooms or the current status of all of the public computers, hey, that's kind of cool. So you've got some options, and it's easier to use and set up than Zybo. I actually would recommend it over Zybo. I mean, even if you have the hardware to run the Zybo digital signage thing, you know, for $40, you can get a Pi. For $80, you can get a Pi with case and stuff. I just do that. I really would. It's just easier to use, and I love it. So, like I said, the OSE, the Open Source Edition, is the free and open source FOSS edition. There is a paid solution with more spiffs, and you should check it out. Once again, links in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. So, you can use Screenly OSE one of two ways. You can simply get Raspbian installed on a SD card or a micro SD card and then just download and install it. Or, for my money and my time, you can head over to Screenly OSE's website and just simply download their custom image that you flash to the SD card using a little program called Win32 Disk Imager. Now, I'll have a link to this in the show notes as well. Win32 Disk Imager is a little open source app that is excellent for writing images to a SD card. So if you have Raspbian as an image, you can easily use Win32 Disk Imager to write that to a SD card or a micro SD card, whatever. It's open source, it's free, you can get it off of SourceForge, and it's very easy to use. Takes a little time sometimes, depending on the size of the SD card or the size of the image. It can take maybe 5 to 10 minutes at most, but it's pretty quick, and it does the job. So you can head over to Screenly OSC's website and just get their custom image. And it's just Raspbian with Screenly OSE pre-installed. It's just ready to go. Save yourself some time and just use that. Links in the show notes. It's easy to put onto an SD card, like I said. Just use the Win32 disk imager. So once you flash that to the to the SD card, pop that card into your Raspberry Pi, hook everything up, and plug it in. Now, you're going to need a live Ethernet jack that connects to the internet to sort of get things going. But once we get things set up, you won't need that Ethernet jack again. So it'll start right up, and it'll go right into a demo display complete with video. I believe it's for Big Buck Bunny, which was a open source movie that was done using open source technology. It's a little cartoon. Looks kind of cute. You should check it out. But let that play through and hit Control-Alt-F1, and that'll get you to a login prompt. And like I said, it's sort of like a Debian offshoot. So if you know Debian Linux, you can figure out Raspbian pretty quickly. It's very, very similar. So Control-Alt-F1 will get you to that login prompt. This login is the default for Raspberry Pi and Raspbian. So in case you don't know, the default user on Raspberry Pis is the user Pi, P-I, and the password is Raspberry, all lowercase. Yes, you should probably change that if you put this out in the public, but for now, let's just get things set up. So the tricky part really isn't getting Screenly OSE to work, because if you use their custom image, it works. I've never had it fail. If I were to have it fail, it would probably be something wrong with the hardware, not the software. So the tricky part isn't getting Screenly OSE to work. It's actually getting the Pi to automatically connect to Wi-Fi. Now, over Ethernet, easy. It's great. Connects right up. Just snap of the fingers and you have Ethernet-based internet access. Wi-Fi needs a little tweaking. So the Raspberry Pi has no problem with Wi-Fi, and if you're using just a stock Pi with stock Raspbian and it's not got Screenly OSE on there, you can connect to the internet using Wi-Fi really easily. It's not hard at all. But because of the way Screenly OSE works, it does get into a graphical operating system, a GUI that looks a lot like LXDE, and if it's not LXDE, it's very close to LXDE. So that's fine, but Screenly just sort of overrides everything and does its own thing. Which is, you know, that's a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is if this thing ever loses power and gets power back, Screenly will come right back up and start showing your slides. Great. The bad thing is you sort of need to get around it to get your Wi-Fi connection going automatically. So to do this, we need to install a better network manager. Now, the Raspberry Pi and Raspbian comes with a network manager. It's okay, but this one is better. And this network manager is called WICD. Now, to keep that straight in my head, I call it WICD. WICD, WICD. And this will make more sense in a few moments. Getting WICD installed is pretty easy, and I'll have this info listed in the show notes, so don't feel like you have to start scribbling things down furiously. But to get it installed, it's just a simple set of commands that you'll be able to copy and paste from the show notes. But with sudo apt-get update to update your packages, and then sudo apt-get install WICD-curses, yes, WICD curses, that gets it installed. That will do the trick for you. So, like I said, I call this network manager WICD, and the whole thing is WICD curses. So, once it installs, you're pretty much halfway there, because WICD is so much better than the sort of stock network manager on Raspbian. So, once it's installed, and it should install pretty quickly, you just invoke it. Type sudo WICD-curses. Now, what you'll get here is a pretty simple interface to set up your Wi-Fi connection. Granted, it's command line and it looks very command line. But if you're used to using things like Nano or Pine or things like that, you know, sort of the old school command line based software, you can navigate this without any problem at all. And just look at the bottom of the screen. It's got all the instructions you would ever need to help figure it out. But it's just a Wi-Fi connection manager. So it will scan your Wi-Fi connections. Of course, I hope you have your USB Wi-Fi adapter plugged in, because if you don't, this is going to be much harder for it to find those Wi-Fi connections. But it's going to scan the sort of local area and see what it can find as far as Wi-Fi hotspots available. So great, that's fine. You just need to set it up. So you use your arrow keys up and down to figure out which one you want to connect to, and then hit the right arrow key to actually start setting it up. From here, it's pretty simple. You just sort of fill in the blanks. You can use a static IP if you like. I'll get into that here in a second, but I usually don't. And then, you know, if you have a password-protected Wi-Fi access, you can set that up as well. It's right near the bottom. It'll ask you for the password. Just put in the password. Now, one quick warning. I don't know how secure your Wi-Fi password needs to be, but as you put it in the first time, it will be listed in plain text. Anyone looking over your shoulder will be able to see it, so cover your shoulders wisely, if that's even an issue. Some people care, some people don't. So just a heads up, as you type that password in the first time, it will show up in clear text. So set up your Wi-Fi access, choose it, password it if needed, and make sure you hit that box that says to connect automatically. It'll be right there. I believe it's right above the password entry. If you hit space, it puts an X in the box, and there you go. It's going to connect to that Wi-Fi network automatically. Great. So after that, hit F10, and that saves everything. And it goes back to your screen to select more Wi-Fi hotspots if you want, but you don't need to. You've already set it up. So hit Shift-C or capital C for connect. If you did it all correctly, the Wi-Fi will start right up and you will have a connection. Brilliant! Oh, except for the fact that it won't do this automatically upon boot. Yeah, that was a problem. But it will, and we can make that happen. So, the trick is that we need to get the Wicked service to start automatically. Wicked has its own service, and it's pretty simple. So, to do that, I just edited the /etc/profile file. Profile file? Yes, the profile file. Yes, /etc/profile to start the service on login. See, when Screenly OSE starts, it logs in as the default user, which is Pi. This is why you should really change Pi's password before you put it out in the public. So always remember, change Pi's password before you put it in the public. Got it? Got it. Great. Okay. So when Screenly OSE starts, it logs in as Pi. And whenever anyone logs in, /etc/profile is invoked. It's just a list of commands. It's basically a batch file. If you remember the old days of autoexec.bat, it's kind of like that. So let's go to etc, just cd/etc. And just to be safe, make a copy of that. Now, you are in a protected area, so you will have to use sudo commands to get it to work. So sudo cp profile profile.back. That's all I did. I just copied the profile to profile.bak. And there we go. Now I've got a copy of it. If things really go sideways, I can always put it back. Then sudo nano profile. Yes, nano. Look, if you're into Emacs or Vi, I guess you can make it work. But really, nano's fine. It will do what we need it to do. And hopefully we only need to do this once. So sudo nano profile. To start the service, it's pretty simple. All we need to do is add sudo service wicd start to the end of that profile section. I go ahead and put a little comment there, so if anyone else is looking at it, they know what that is. They might not know what Wicked is off the top of their head. Maybe you've got someone new or whatever. So I'll say something in a comment of start the Wicked network manager, or you know, something like that, just to kind of call attention as to what this is and why it's there. But it is a service, And that's exactly what you want. You want that wicked service to start as soon as someone logs in. Great. And then hit Control X, because this is Nano, and save the file. Great. Moment of truth time. We need to reboot this Pi. So a quick sudo reboot will do the job, and then you sit back and wait. Now, if the Pi has another downfall, besides the fact that it doesn't do multitasking very well, it's the fact that it sometimes takes forever to come back up from a reboot, sometimes 3 to 4 minutes, and sometimes it takes some time. So just heads up, this is something that you're going to spend a little bit of time just sitting, looking at the screen, and waiting for things to happen. So, okay, reboot the Pi. And when Screenly OSE comes up, one of the things that will do automatically is give you a splash screen, and it will have the IP that you connect to manage Screenly on that Pi. Now, sometimes, just sometimes, it doesn't get the Wi-Fi connection in time to display that. It'll say it can't find the, you know, it cannot display a network manager, or it cannot display an IP or something like that. It'll give an error message and you think, oh my God, I failed. Well, no, maybe not. Let it go ahead and come up. And then we're going to do the Control-Alt-F1 thing again to get to a login prompt. And we're going to go make sure. Because like I said, sometimes it just doesn't grab that Wi-Fi connection in time and get its IP assigned in time to display it. So hit Control-Alt-F1 and log in again as the user Pi. Once you're logged in, type ifconfig, that's ifconfig, no spaces, and you should see an IP under WLAN 0. If you do, there you go. You are connected. It just didn't grab it in time to show it on Screenly. Pop that IP into a web browser on your network and add :8080, so you're connecting to port 8080, and ta-da, you can manage Screenly OSE. And from there on out, it will connect to the Wi-Fi automatically. Now, if you're going to move this out to another place, you should set it up in that place. So go ahead and get it up and running wherever you're at. Maybe you're at your desk or you got a workbench, something like that. But if you're going to take it out to another branch or another location or something, be ready to sort of do the entire setup there, because it's going to want to connect to whatever Wi-Fi is available there and not what is available at your workbench. So just a heads up, set it up in the place that you're actually going to use it. It doesn't take long. You can probably get the whole thing going in 10 minutes once you practice it a little bit. So you can set up a persistent IP in Wicked if you want, and there's nothing wrong with that. I was kind of in a hurry, so I'm just going to basically defer to the DHCP reservation at the router and let the router just look at that, get its MAC address, and say, oh, I know who you are, and you need to use this IP here, and it will always get the same IP through DHCP. Now, your mileage may vary, your network may be a little different, that may not work for you, and you may think I'm blasphemous for even suggesting it. However, works pretty well for me, and it will probably work pretty well for you, especially if you're not into the whole networking gizmos, routers, and all of that stuff. It's pretty easy to set up a DHCP reservation. So that's about it. It's not very hard to get going, and I know this sounds like a lot of gobbledygook if you don't have any sort of grasp upon Linux, but let me sort of allay that fear by saying, if you just follow the notes that I'm going to put in the show notes, you'll probably get it up and running pretty quickly. It might take you 45 minutes the first time, but once you get it and once you get it working, it's the same process to get it working again. And it'll be the same process to get it working after that. And it gets to the point where what I'm going to wind up doing before we send this out into the wild, if we send this out into the wild, is I'm going to make my own custom image of that installation. So it has everything already sort of set up. And so instead of just flashing the Screenly OSE custom image to an SD card, I'll be flashing my own custom image to that SD card, and it'll already be set up to work. Save money, time, and space, and hey, free and open source software once again for the win. FOSS FTW. Thank you. And that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in, and hey, I hope even if you don't make a digital signage solution or a digital shelf talker or whatnot, you go get yourself a Raspberry Pi and just play with the thing. It's inexpensive, and it can be a great little toy, or it can be a great little tool, or it could be a little bit of both. It's great either way. They're fun to fiddle with and figure out new and interesting hacks and things to try with them. So check one out. Even if you don't wind up using it at your library in any way, shape, or form, it's just great to sort of hack around with and play with. I really cannot recommend one highly enough. They're fun and entertaining, and you can learn so much about Linux and things like that. I know more about Linux on ARM and learn more about Linux on ARM processors this last week than I have in the last year. So good stuff there. Try a Raspberry Pi. Check the show notes. You'll be able to pick some up fairly inexpensively that way. The song you're currently digging on is Ado by Peter Sharp. Earlier in the episode, you heard Ice Cold by Jason Shaw. And of course, the opening track, as always, is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita. Picked all of that up at the Free Music Archive, right on at freemusicarchive.org. Head on over there. Pick a genre. They've got all kinds of genres and subgenres, all kinds of cool stuff. Find something that kind of interests you, hit play, and see what you can find. New music, great tracks, things that you won't hear anywhere else. The Free Music Archive, check them out. Absolutely excellent. Cyberpunk Librarian is hosted by Archive.org, the internet archive where there are great people doing great things, preserving the internet and saving it too, home of the Wayback Machine and all kinds of great stuff like the Prelinger Video Archives. You should totally check out Archive.org. Not only will you find some really great stuff from the internet's past and the internet's present, but you'll find other great podcasts like this one. If you think this one's great, there are probably better ones over there too. Go check them out, archive.org.
Now give me a beat.
If you'd like to drop me a line, you certainly can, and I'm all about the options. You can hit me up via the old school email at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com, or contact me on Twitter. I am at Bibrarian, that's B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It's like librarian, but it's spelled with a B. Or you can check me out on Google+. I am google.com/plus Daniel Messer. Drop me a line, suggest a topic for the show, tell me something you liked about this show, tell me something you didn't like about this show. I would love to hear from you, and I try to respond to absolutely everything that comes my way. So by all means, hit me up and tell me what you think. And if you've got an idea for a future show, let me know, because I would love to hear those ideas from my listeners. One last thing, I will be speaking at Tech Phoenix on November 15th. Tech Phoenix is a great little tech conference held in the Phoenix area at the University of Advanced Technology in Tempe. So if you're in the area on November 15th, you can certainly drop by. It's something like $12 and change for the admission to the conference, where we talk about new media and podcasting and social networking and technology and all of that good stuff. But if you don't have the $12, you'd like to get a little bit of a discount, use offer code ATTENDMYSESSION, that is all one word, ATTENDMYSESSION, and you get half off. So $6 and change. You really can't beat that. And I tell you, it's a great little tech conference. I really like going to that. Great people. So hope to see you at Tech Phoenix. And if not, I hope to see you here again on the next episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, due out 2 weeks from today. So we're going to get out of here, but just one quick reminder that you don't have to be high tech to be low budget, but it certainly helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.